This is an of the 30th International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous. May we open our meeting in the usual manner with a short period of silence followed by a general recital of the Serenity Prayer. You may use this silence, of course, as you see fit. It could be, though, that part of it could be turned over in meditation to God as we individually understand Him for the AA recoveries of these past 30 years. May we have that silence now, please. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. For purpose of qualification, my name is Neil. I am an alcoholic. Hi! And I'm a member of the Harmony Group here in Toronto. Someone once said that AA in Toronto was composed of the Harmony Group and 60-some-odd branches. That won't go so well when this is over. There may be some who are not familiar with our tradition of personal anonymity at the public level. If so, we respectfully ask that no AA speaker or member be identified by full name in published or broadcast reports of our meeting. The assurance of anonymity is essential to our efforts to help other alcoholics. And our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles come before personalities. Ladies and gentlemen, usually when a chairman wishes to introduce a speaker, he likes to have something factual to say, something interesting, something nice to say about that speaker. Our first speaker tonight, I met only a short half hour or so ago, but I found in him a warmth of personality that men like to find in another man. I'm certain that he won't be speaking very long before this personality is reflected also on you. Something factual, something interesting. The facts make the interest. Our speaker is a very, very early member of AA. He came in Akron, Ohio, a number of years ago. He was the first member of AA in Cleveland and did much to establish groups and the membership there. He is the second living AA in the world from a standpoint of sobriety, the 40th member of Alcoholics Anonymous. As he sits here tonight, he has 27 years of consecutive sobriety. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a great privilege for me to present to you Clarence C. of St. Petersburg, Florida.
Thank you very much. I was wondering who he was talking about for a moment. I am Clarence Snyder, and I live in St. Petersburg, and I'm a displaced Yankee from Cleveland, Ohio. You know, this has been wonderful here, meeting so many of my old friends and making so many new ones. This is tremendous. I'm overwhelmed with the spirit of this get-together they're having here in Toronto. I just can't express it properly. You know, when they first wrote to me about coming here, when I received this mail, there was some doubt as to whether I could make it. I finally got here, and I'm certainly glad I did. And when I finally did accept the invitation, I was asked to talk about my early experiences in AA. Well, believe me, I couldn't get started talking about any of these in the time allotted to me. But originally, they talked about having this to be an old-timers meeting. And they were trying to get old Jimmy Burwell and I to co-chair an old-timers meeting. We got checking around, and it was pretty sad when I got looking through my records about where the old-timers were. There's a good many of them have gone to the reward. But somehow or other, this old-timers meeting deal has sort of gone by the boards, I guess. And I think we ought to have one. I would like to dedicate this meeting to it. I'll be that presumptuous. You know what I'd like to do? I've met a lot of my old friends here. I'd like everyone in this room who will be 25 years or has had 25 years of AA experience this year to stand up. Let's see you. Don't sit down, you people. I want people who will be 24, 23, 22, and 20. Anyone up to 20 years old this year. Let's see you all get up. Now, thank you. For the benefit of any people here who may be new or have never been to any AA functions, remember this, that in this room here, there's probably 5% of the AA population, and these people here are probably 5% of those old-timers. So that means there's a good many of them around yet. This should be an inspiration to everyone. You know, I heard some talk last night about old-timers. I didn't see any, so I wanted to see some tonight. And where they come from, you read their badges, you'll find out. And they'll all be glad to share their experiences with you. Now, I was asked to talk about my experiences, and when looking at some of these folks who got up, some of these people shared many of those experiences with me. And I'm not going to tell their stories. And I can't tell very much about my early experiences here, but I would like to tell you or mention something about the miracle of AA. We heard something about miracles last night from Bill. And I think each and every one of us, our experience is a miracle. And the way I got to this fellowship certainly was a miracle because I did everything just the way it shouldn't be done. Typical alcoholic. I joined an organization or a fellowship or that didn't exist. I came into AA when there was no AA. I want to tell this little story. It illustrates a point. At the time I was married to my first wife, and I had my last chance to come back and stay in the nest. And this was predicated upon the idea that I should go to work for her brother. Well, there's two things wrong with this. First, the place, I didn't like to work. His brother had a truck and ran to New York and back with it. The second place, I didn't like him either. But I had to take this opportunity, this challenge. It didn't work out. That was probably 30 years ago, or maybe longer. And I never had my hands on the wheel of that truck yet. I got drunk on the way, as you might guess, and he threw me out on the waterfront in New York City. And he wrote his sister and told her what he'd done and told her that this was the end of the line for me. He had another sister in Yonkers, Virginia. I made my way out to Yonkers. I thought surely she would help me and take me in. Instead of getting up to her house where she lived up top of a hill, I went down the hill and got into an Italian neighborhood and met some nice Italian people. And I finally made my way up that hill, made my entrance to her home. The only thing I remember about this, I was rolling around on the floor with a couple of her kids, and she took a dim view of this. She put me in her car and took me right down where her brother had thrown me out, and she did the same. I was in New York City, a city of 8 million people. I didn't have a dime. I had nothing. I had no clothes. I had no place to go. I was alone. Such a feeling of aloneness I've never experienced. I hope you don't ever have to. I don't know how long I stayed there, but eventually I got back to Cleveland. Something happened while I was up there in New York. A miracle happened. I don't know when this took place, but Virginia had the doctor over for one of her kids one day. And they got to talking about drinking. And she told the doctor about this drunken brother-in-law of hers who used to be such a swell guy once and what an awful bum he is now. And he said, you know, that's odd. I had a brother-in-law that was a drunk like that, and he met some cult. Some bunch of guys that spend all their time sobering up drunks. And he hasn't had a drink since he got mixed up with this bunch. And also, this fellow knows a doctor down in Akron, Ohio, who is also mixed up with all these drunks and spends all his time fooling with drunks and trying to fix them. Says, now, if this fellow Snyder ever gets back to Akron, maybe you can send him down to see this doctor. Maybe he can fix him. I didn't know anything about this going on. But when I got back to Cleveland, tried to get in the nest, a little woman met me on the front porch, through the screen door, and she told me about this doctor and asked me if I'd like to go down and see him. So what could I lose? I told her, yes, I'd go. So she bought me a one-way bus ticket and put me on it. That's how I met my sponsor, Dr. Baum. The chap that she was talking, the doctor in Yonkers was Dr. Leonard Strong, who happened to be Bill Wilson's brother-in-law. Now, what kind of chances mathematically did I ever have to get here? That's how I wound up here. Doc put me in City Hospital in Akron, Ohio. I stayed there a week. These men came in to see me every day. I remember one fellow especially, Paul Stanley. Most all these fellows are dead and gone now. Paul Stanley came in the last day I was there. He came in breakfast time to talk to me. He was there. He ate my breakfast for me, I might add. I was there a week. I hadn't been started to eat yet. I weighed 130 pounds. I couldn't eat. I could shake. He was there for lunch. He got my lunch. I got the dessert. Doc came in about 4 o'clock and took over.
And this is my beginning in this fellowship, and this is what happened to me. I want you to listen to this very carefully, how they handed this spiritual aspect of AA to us at the time, how I got mine. If any of you folks who've had the pleasure of meeting Doc remember him as a tall, angular fellow with hands, fingers on him this long. He had the type of eyes he could look right through you. So he looked at me, sat on the bed, a very unprofessional posture. And he looked at me and he finally says, "Well, young fellow, what do you think of all this by now?" I said, "Well, I think this is fine." I said, "It's wonderful, all these fellows coming in, talking to me, telling me their life story. They all tell me one thing. They tell me they have the answer to my problem, but they don't tell me what the answer is." He says, "What is it? What do I have to do?" This was a medical doctor I'm talking to. So he looks at me. He says, "Well, we don't know about you, young fellow. You're pretty young. We don't know if you're ready yet." "Don't know if you're ready yet. I weighed 130 pounds. I didn't have any more home than a rabbit. Didn't have a dime. Didn't have any clothes. My future was most uncertain." Everything about me was clouded. So what do I have to do to be ready? He says, "Well," he says, "young fellows like you, we haven't had any luck with. They're the only ones we ever had are screwballs. They're all nuts." Well, that added up all right. I had to convince this man that I was ready to come into this fellowship. This is somewhat different than the approach today, when we beg them to come in here, to give them this wonderful opportunity. We ought to shoot them. Well, finally, I guess I must have convinced him that I was ready. So he says, "All right, I'll tell you what you need here. I'll give you the answer to this." So I'm waiting for this. So he turns to me and he looks a hole right through me. He says, "Young fella," he says, "do you believe in God?" This is the last thing I ever expected to hear from a doctor. So naturally, I didn't want any of this kind of mishmash. So I had to evade this. So the only logical answer is, "What does that have to do with it?" So I asked him, "What does that have to do with it?" He says, "Young fellow, that has everything to do with it. Do you or don't you?" Here I am, stuck. So I finally says, "Well, I guess I do." He says, "There's no guessing about it, you do or you don't." Here I am. I'm down here under obligation as a bunch of religious nuts. What can I do? So I finally says, "Yeah." I says, "I do believe in God." He says, "That's fine, young fellow. Now we can get someplace." "How are we going to get someplace?" He says, "Get out of that bed. Get on your knees. We're going to pray." I says, "Who's going to pray?" He says, "We're going to pray." I says, "I don't know anything about praying." He says, "I don't suppose you do." He says, "All you'll have to do is repeat after me what I say, and that'll do for this time." So there I was, on my bones in his hospital. I did what he said, what he ordered me to do. He didn't suggest it. It didn't kill me either. I'm here. Then when we concluded, he shook hands with me. He says, "Young fellow, you're going to be all right." He carried me to a meeting that night. That was my beginning in AA. A lot of things have happened since then. I've made a lot of friends. I had no friends, as I told you. I know thousands of people now, all over this country and out of this country. It's a wonderful experience. It's made a big change in my life. Now, you want to talk about a couple of people I met in AA? I can show you some in this crowd here that I can tell you some stories about. I better not. These people are sane now. But I'll tell you one about a girl. We were listening to some talk last night about female alcoholics. You'd think they all came in here in New York or something. They come in someplace else, too.
Let me tell you about the first one I ever met. This girl, Catherine. I made the jug twice with her. Twice. Not once wasn't enough. She was Irish. And she had all the temperament that went with it. She came from a wealthy family, but she was living with a bunch of Italian bootleggers in a very rundown neighborhood. And she was one of the worst specimens of humanity. She'd fallen lower than any person I ever met up to that time in my life. And I think since. A social worker got me after her, and the social worker wouldn't leave me alone. Kept me bugging me about this Catherine all the time. So one day I met Catherine on the street. She'd been out the workhouse so many times at his home sweet home to her. She's doing life sentence on the installment plan out in the workhouse. I met her on the street one day, and she's drunk, as usual. And I tried to get her off the street, and Catherine agreed to go along with me, but first she wanted to eat. Imagine, she's going to eat. So I tried to get her in one of those one-arm places, and this didn't work. She had finesse, and she had culture. She wanted a place with a tablecloth on it. I like those places, too, but she shouldn't be in it. I knew I was wrong. I shouldn't have done this. But I took her in a nice place where they had male waiters with tuxedos on. Spaghetti House. And what does Catherine order but spaghetti? We go in there and she's loud, she's profane, and she's dirty, and she smells. And the waiter don't like it. And it's high noon and all the businessmen are in there eating. So the waiter comes in and tries to shush her a couple of times, and she don't like him at all. The second time he come back, she told him something about his ancestors. The head waiter come back. She don't like him in the first time. And he told her that if unless they quiet down, we'd have to leave. Well, he walked away, turned on his heel. First thing you know, he's back. By this time, the waiter had brought the spaghetti. Catherine is trying to eat spaghetti. She has it in her hair. And the next thing you know, this head waiter come back, he had it in his hair. Next thing I know, the wagon's there. But Catherine and I are in it. I get down there and I'm in the pokey down there and I said, I don't belong here. They said, yeah, we know. I finally says, call Ed Crowley. He's a probation officer. He knows me. He'll explain everything. Yeah. In the afternoon, they finally, sometime, they got it, Ed. Anyway, Ed come down. He thought this was hilarious. He got me out. He got me out, but they kept Catherine. Sometime later, after Catherine got out of the coop, I met her again. Right down at 82nd and Euclid. You people in Cleveland who know this place. There's a Jewish temple on one corner and a Unitarian church on the other. Traffic lights there. A lot of people walking around. High noon. I meet Catherine. She's slopped again. I ask her to come along. We go home. Get off the street. No food this time. So I start taking her home. And we get ready to go across the street. Now, this isn't very delicate. But Catherine feels the call of nature. Thousands of people walking back and forth. She squats and I'm holding her hand. A lot of interested passers-by come along. But she has some choice remarks for them. And away we go again. Anybody can beat Catherine, I want to meet them. Again, call Ed Crowley.
Well, Ed finally comes and he gets me out again. They keep Catherine. I got a hold of Miss Mooney, this probation officer, this woman that's so interested in Catherine, and I told her, this is getting monotonous. We have to do something. So it was a very easy frame. We framed Catherine and gave her a year out at the workhouse. Well, I dare not go out and see Catherine because she knew what happened, who framed her. So I had to stay away till things cooled down. A couple of weeks she sent for me. She told them she wanted to see me. So I went down to the dime store. I'm the last of the big spenders. I bought her some toilet water and some cigarettes and some perfume down at the dime store. Took a little bag out and some candy. And I made, this is my peace offering. And I went out there and I'm glad they had her behind something. She couldn't get at me. She let loose. She told me everything she ever learned. This is before they let women in the Navy, too. And after she simmered down, I gave her my peace offering. And I went out to see Catherine at least once a week for the whole year she was out there. Catherine came out of that place, and Miss Mooney got her a job working as a lifeguard on one of the city beaches. Yeah. You know, it took her about 6 months to clean that girl up when she got out there, believe me. She had everything from dandruff to fallen arches. She had it all. They cleaned her up in the hospital, and she got to be pretty human. And quite a change. Mooney got her this job as a lifeguard, and after the swimming season was over, she got her job in a hotel as a floor clerk there, picking up keys as people went out. Catherine went to school. She took up her typing again. She knew how to type, but she refreshed herself in this. Took up stenographic work. She became a stenographer. Eventually became a secretary. Eventually, she saved her money, too. Mooney put her in a good location out with some other people away from the old location she was. Catherine saved her money. She went in the real estate business and became wealthy. This is one of the people that we hear about, that we don't hear about. Now you did hear about it. These are people who make it. I'm so glad so many of us do. Everybody has the opportunity to make this. I think a whole lot rests on you and I, what our responsibility is toward these people who come. There's a reason why some people make it. I think people came in back here, at least people that stood up, including myself. We were probably luckier than you people. We were all broke. We didn't have a dime. We had no televisions. We had no automobiles. We had no nothing. We had only ourselves, each other. And we spent an awful lot of time together. And we still do. I hear people today talking about, worrying about... The lights are going on here. I hear people worrying about drinking. I never hear any of these birds talking about drinking. They got too many other things to do. I think the whole crux of the matter came one time when I was in Akron after a meeting. Bill Van Horn, one of the boys down there, I think who did more for me, perhaps, than anyone there. One night he got me inside and he says, Clarence, I'm going to give you the answer to this whole thing. I want to give you what he gave me. This thing made the biggest impression on me of anything ever happened to me in my AA career. Bill Van Horn had gotten... Doc had taken him out of a nut house. He'd been probated there. He wasn't any more nut either than the rest of us. But they put him away because he was hard to control. Doc got him out. Bill took a shine to me. He used to always talk to me after meetings. So one night he took his big pocketbook out. He says, I'm going to give you the answer to this. He took all his old papers and rubbish out of his pocketbook. He handed me a slip of paper on which was written the Bible verse. He says, now, Clarence, I want you to read this. I want you to memorize it. I don't want you to ever forget it, because this is the answer to the whole thing. So I read that verse, and I did what Bill told me to do. It was a verse of 2 Corinthians, the 5th chapter, 17th verse. And it reads, therefore, if any man be in Christ, he is a new creature. Old things are passed away. Behold, all things are become new. If that isn't the answer to our whole situation, who among you here isn't different than what he was when he came here? Even though I've seen many, many people come here
Maybe some of them haven't made it right off. Maybe some of them never did. But something's happened to every person who walked into this AA fellowship. And you can't deny it. If it didn't do anything else, it spoiled your drinking. You'll never be the same again once you're exposed to this fellowship, because something touches us when we come here. And what Bill Van Horn said, in essence, this is the hand of God touching us, you and I. We are, of all people, most privileged. Thank you.